Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 25, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter August 25, 2020. Despite the modern means of communication, people feel increasingly more lonely. The new communication lacks feelings, a heartfelt connection. It does not fill the emptiness. It has no empathy. We are about to reveal an enormous emptiness. A black hole. From Twitter, August 25, 2020. Medium published my new article Relocation, Change Your Place, Change Your Luck. American society is on the move. More than one in five as adults. 22% of the population has relocated or knows someone likely to do so as a consequence of COVID-19's socioeconomic impact, according to a recent study. Silicon Valley companies like Google, Facebook, Twitter, and others have sent their employees to work from home, making their physical proximity to the workplace irrelevant. High rents and safety concerns are the main reasons for considering relocation in many communities, marking a trend to abandon the city for rural areas. Does this indicate a step backward? No, simple life is moving forward. A wonderful unexpected outcome from the pandemic on our way of living will be an open door to a simpler, happier, and more fulfilling life. Mobility is a U.S. characteristic. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, on average, Americans change their place of residence no less than 11 times during their lives, mainly pursuing better job opportunities. But relocation due to the pandemic has a peculiar characteristic: it is a true move back to basics. Residents in urban areas are increasingly abandoning the stressful and expensive big cities to settle in the quiet and pastoral countryside, a noticeable trend in America and Europe. Decades ago, people flocked from farms and villages to the big cities expecting to fulfill their dreams of progress and upward mobility. Today, businesses are closing and those still employed are changing their work patterns from activities in the physical workplace to remote engagement. So, what now is the benefit of living in the urban areas? None. The pandemic is transforming our lifestyle for good. We will realize more and more how adapting to a more virtual environment is a positive thing. When the population is more scattered and evenly dispersed, everyone benefits, the ecology and humans. Conversely, overcrowded, high-density cities add stress to surrounding environments and pose challenges in the efficient use of natural resources such as water, energy, and food. On the personal level, life outside the urban areas is more manageable, affordable, and healthy. The Babylonian Talmud says Meshein Makom, Meshein Ma, which means that by changing our place we change our destiny, literally. In fact, our external conditions influence our priorities and focus in life. This also refers to an inner transformation that takes place. A shift to a quiet, simple lifestyle will make us feel better, calmer, and more balanced. And because of this, we will get along with each other more easily. Being routed to the land with plenty of space for a home vegetable garden and a children's playground will alleviate the stressful burden of the polluted and noisy concrete jungle. We all feel secure with the familiar, even if it is far from ideal. This is why people resist change. But the pandemic is ushering us swiftly forward to a profound transformation from one reality to another. Little by little, we are realizing that there is no going back, only forward to a more global world where the boundaries between us are vanishing. We have the whole world at our fingertips. From work to interpersonal communications and purchases, all is within easy reach, within a matter of seconds. Someone can call for any service from America and reach a customer care representative in India without the slightest feeling of distance. We have truly become one global village. Metropolitan areas will remain as centers for entertainment, culture, tourist attractions and more. Large factories that are indispensable for supplying society's needs will also continue in big cities, but the population will disperse in different directions. A wonderful unexpected outcome from the pandemic on our way of living will be an open door to a simpler, happier, and more fulfilling life. Medium published my new article, Nothing Wrong with Egoism, if used right. When we talk about egoism being the bane of our generation, we need to understand what it means. After all, where would we be without it? We wouldn't have industry, modern medicine, or communication. We wouldn't be able to travel, explore, or lead a pleasant and easy life compared to our forefathers. Moreover, the ego is not man's creation, it is inherent in our nature. So when we praise nature, how can we condemn the ego, nature's own creation? Today, America, which has cultivated the ego culture more than any other country, is reeling with the pain of resisting nature's pull. But thankfully, there is no need to suffer. If we understand that we do not need to kill our egos but simply use them correctly, share with others and strengthen our communities, we too will evolve, our lives will be safe, and our consciousness will encompass all of humanity and all of reality. The problem isn't with the ego, it is with how much, and when we use it. In a sense, the ego is everywhere. It is what maintains the shape of atoms and does not let them disintegrate. Nevertheless, in order for atoms to develop, they relinquish exclusivity of one or more of their electrons and share them with other atoms to create molecules, which is the next stage of their own evolution. As molecules relinquish some of their exclusivity and share parts of themselves with other molecules, they create molecular structures that in the end become cells, which begin to divide and multiply, and before you know it, you have life. In other words, life consists of selfish elements that relinquish exclusivity of parts of themselves and share them with other elements. But by doing so, atoms, molecules, and cells don't extinguish themselves. On the contrary, they guarantee their survival because now their existence is vital to someone else besides themselves. Moreover, by partaking in the evolution of a more complex system, they themselves evolve. All of creation follows the same evolutionary principle, and this is how our universe was built, with humankind within it. We, too, are subject to the same laws of development. Socially, we evolved from clans to villages, from villages to towns, from towns to counties, from counties to countries, and now into a global village. But while our societies evolved, our psyches have remained uncared for, now it is their turn. They are the last element in creation that has not been touched, and now it is their turn. We are at the dawn of an era where we will learn to relinquish parts of ourselves and share them with others in order to create true bonding. We will become one entity not only as communities of individuals, but people will feel each other as parts of themselves. It is a level of connection that we have never experienced, but which our egos are afraid to try, thinking that this will be their end. Indeed, the only thing that stands in the way of this final stage of evolution is our ego. It does not want to relinquish anything regardless of the cost. Like cancer, it is willing to die along with its host, as long as it does not share anything with anyone. But nature will not stop evolving until it brings all of reality into its highest level of development, where all parts both share and sustain one another, and thereby expand their consciousness to encompass the entire system of existence. Those who resist the process will suffer along the way, but they, too, will reach it. Today, America, which has cultivated the ego culture more than any other country, is reeling with the pain of resisting nature's pull. But thankfully, there is no need to suffer. If we understand that we do not need to kill our egos but simply use them correctly, share with others and strengthen our communities, we too will evolve, our lives will be safe, and our consciousness will encompass all of humanity and all of reality. My new article on LinkedIn humor, not mockery. Talk show after talk show, comedian after comedian, everyone's trying to be funny, to make us laugh. But they really needn't go a long way to do that. All they have to do is find a topical issue, invite a guest or talk about a certain person, and drag their names through the mud until they have lost all speck of respect in the eyes of the audience. With humor, the rule of thumb is this: when it brings people closer and increases affection, it is good. When it sets us apart and increases derision, it is bad and we must push it away. More than anything, the media's humor is a mark of disgrace for our society. And the soaring rating they get only proves that we are growing worse. The truth is very simple: if I find someone else's pain funny, then I am not a good person. It may not be easy to acknowledge, but unless we know the truth, we will never change. Mockery is not humor, it is venting our venom into the atmosphere and poisoning the air with our ill will. Later, we shouldn't be surprised that we can't trust anyone, that we're afraid of everyone, and that we feel alone and depressed. We helped build this exact atmosphere with our own foul minds. Media that presents sneering entertainment is not our friend, either. These shows indoctrinate us to be cynical, mean, and unsympathetic, the exact opposite of what we need to build a happy life. We shouldn't give these shows the rating that they get, and we certainly shouldn't idolize talk show hosts or comedians who deride their guests. They are not our friends and they do not have our interest in mind. The crueler they make us be toward each other, the more they profit, and the more unhappy we become. True humor is a gift. When you look at a pet doing funny things, or when your baby does baby stuff, it's very funny and it's good humor because it stems from our love for them and even increases it. Also, when humor helps us cope with hardships, it is a true gift. We can even use humor for constructive criticism, but first we must make certain that we love the person we will criticize, and then use humor as the most inoffensive way to make suggestions. However, here we must be very careful, since our ill will rejoices in opportunities to offer sound advice, when in fact it strives to patronize and reprimand. With humor, the rule of thumb is this: when it brings people closer and increases affection, it is good. When it sets us apart and increases derision, it is bad and we must push it away. The Germans of the Laws of Moses, Part 2. At odds with their people. Comment: in the first third of the 19th century, the disintegration of the Jewish people in Germany reached its climax, and one of the symptoms of the national malaise was the phenomenon of self-hatred. Quite often, the Jews who assimilated became Christians or atheists and developed hatred for those who still observed their traditional customs. My response: if a Jew is not a Kabbalist who exists on two levels and understands both his animal level, which relates to the peoples of the world, and the spiritual level, which raises him above the animal level and calls him to unite, if he is not guided by the spiritual Kabbalistic principle of all sins, that is, all differences between us, will be covered by love, then in the end he becomes at odds with his people. He loves some, dislikes others, this synagogue he attends, but in that one he will not set foot, etc. All this is based on conflict between people. Therefore, there are as many opinions as the number of Jews out there. The Jews have the same conflicts as all the other nations of the world because their animal root continues to exist from the time of ancient Babylon. Comment: the German Jewish psychologist Kurt Lewin wrote from America, where he fled in 1939, "A person will dislike everything specifically Jewish, for he will see in it that which keeps him away from the majority for which he is longing. He will show dislike for those Jews who are outspokenly so, and will frequently indulge in self-hatred. Self-hatred arises from a sense of inferiority, from the fact that the Jew looks at himself through the eyes of the non-Jewish majority, out of fear of being unlike the majority, of being different." My response: naturally, he will try to be more German, French, and English than the Germans themselves or the French or English. This is what we see. For more on this topic, read my book The Jewish Choice, Unity or Antisemitism, Historical Facts on Antisemitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord. From CAB TV's The Germans of the Laws of Moses, August 12, 2019. New Life 1269. The Citizen and the Leadership in a Corrected State.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. And today we'd like to talk about being a citizen, Dr. Lightman. These are special times in Israel and all around the world. There's a feeling of rage, public rage, citizens against their countries, the leadership. People are discontent, frustrated. They blame their hardships in life and the mistakes of the governments and wrong decisions and everything. In short, the relationship between a citizen and his country all over the world is very tense, really on the verge of exploding. Now, we'd like to put all of that aside and look at the relationship between a citizen and the country in a new light, from this perspective and from that perspective, on our way to something a bit better. And I'd like to start asking from the point of view of a citizen, what is the correct attitude of a citizen in a corrected country toward the country and the leadership, towards the state and the leadership? Again, the right attitude. The correct attitude of a citizen toward his state. Let's put aside what we know, Dr. Lightman. In a corrected state, obviously, what has to be here is, how to say this, an attitude of mutual understanding about what has to be done. A country is like a family. This is how it has to be felt by a citizen. And a citizen has to relate to the country as to his own family. That is, relatives, that all of these are his relatives. And that there are these wise people that are leading the country, this family of his. And he embraces everyone and cares for them like for his own family, and they care for him. And he feels this as something mutual internally all the time. Nice, eh? Well, yeah, I wish. Next question. What is a citizen's responsibility for the stability and the good life in the country? Dr. Lightman, in such a country, a citizen starts feeling that he's responsible for everything, not only for his share, but this is something that he keeps for sure, but in general, he has a concern for the entire system, for it to function properly, for it to give everyone warmth and a sense of security and health, everything that a state has to provide to everyone. Owen, this, let's call him good citizen. What are his privileges and what are his obligations toward the country? Dr. Lightman, his privileges are that the country provides him with the basic needs that he needs in order to be able to live his life. That's all he needs. And his obligations are for him to provide the country with everything that he can in order to promise the country to exist in the best possible, strongest, healthiest way toward all of its citizens and systems and everything. Maybe we got a bit confused on the way. in defining the relationship between the citizen and the country. Maybe today we really don't understand what are the privileges, what are the obligations, Dr. Lightman. We're opposite to that, undoubtedly, because what I'm saying is that every citizen cares about giving as little as possible and receiving as much as he can. And to this day, we're acting the complete opposite. Owen, why is that corrected citizen concerned with taking as much as he can, and why should he give as much as he can and receive only what he needs? Dr. Lightman, love is what motivates him. Love toward his nation, the country, its structure, everything. Owen, okay, let's put the citizen aside and look at this from the point of view of a country. In a corrected state, what should the responsibility of the leadership be in relation to the citizens? Dr. Lightman, care and concern for each and every citizen and for all of them together, for everyone to have a corrected life as much as possible, a good life. And here, on part of the government, on part of the state, we have to see how can the government share its concern for the country in general and every citizen in particular. Poland, what's the balance? Dr. Lightman, we have to see how much does every person need in order to live his life, where he has his basic needs, that his basic needs are provided for. In short, he has everything that he needs, and he doesn't want more than that. He doesn't want to receive more than that from the country, because this is how he was raised, by the country. And it's all true and correct, because according to our body, we belong to the animate world, and the animate world, as much as it receives according to what it needs, that's good for it. It doesn't need more. And all the rest, the country is concerned with itself, how to raise the children, how to develop different cultural facilities, education, culture, things that have to do with the nation in general, for there to be parks and swimming pools, and the more the merrier. This way, Owen, if I'd like to define what are the privileges and obligations of the country, the state, in regard to its citizens, what are the obligations of a country in relation to its citizens? Dr. Lightman, for everyone to relatively equal, have an equal standard of living. Owen, and the privileges of a country in relation to its citizens? Dr. Lightman, that the state compels, it's hard to tell these things apart, but that the state has to give its citizens as many facilities as possible, and everything that has to do with the nation in general, and suppose to build everything for free for children, swimming pools and courts and kindergartens and schools and everything and everything, of course, for free and abundantly. And this is what it has to. And what it receives is, it receives from citizens a good and nice attitude that they understand it. Owen, you said that this relationship, complex relationship between the citizen and the country, is that the country feels like a family. And then we started talking about this from the side of the citizen and the country. Now, after we pictured all of this, I want to put this aside and go back to the problems that we have today. All around the world, we see a rage that citizens are outraged about the functioning of their governments. How did we come to this? Dr. Levin, it's not what I'm talking about at all. Because we are managing the world, if we can say so, by the force of the ego. And what I'm talking about is not the force of the ego, but it's the force of connection, the force of love, the force of mutual understanding. It's the opposite. Olin, what went wrong in the relationship between all the factors and an individual citizen and the citizens in general and the leadership? Dr. Leitman, priorities. Those in government are thinking only about their chair, only about their power, how to keep their position, how to fight those that want to throw them out their chair and take their place. Olin, is the problem the current form of governance or particular ways of functioning? Dr. Leitman, the problem is that we're not fighting our ego, our general nature of each and every one and of all of humanity together. Olin, what is this force that we're not fighting and therefore we're missing out? What is the force of ego? Dr. Leitman, the force of the ego is that I want to be first and best in everything that I want. And as much as I care, everyone else could be a zero and even less. And throughout history, we see all over the world that when countries were discontent, nations were discontent with the regime, they brought it down by way of revolution, military revolution, civil revolution. The method of citizens making a revolution, is it relevant for our time? Dr. Leitman, no. Because first of all, we've built a kind of what we call democracy, where no one feels that they are in captivity in some way, that they have some kind of problem toward others. But their laws, please use them. Take the power by force according to the laws of the government, and then you can carry on. You can put the current regime aside and be instead of it, only do it according to the laws. And the nation actually agrees to these laws because the laws are as if in favor of all of its citizens. Olin, as if is a good word. What do you mean when you say as if in favor? Dr. Leitman, because behind all of this, there's crony capitalism that toy around with the parties and all the different currents in the nation, and they're the ones that are controlling it. And part of the problem is that today there is a feeling that there is a complete disconnection separating between the ruling elites and an ordinary person. His problems, his life, do you agree that this disconnection is dominant in this painful relationship? Dr. Leitman, yes. Olin, is it possible to change it? Dr. Leitman, no, it's impossible to change it. It can come only through education, only by educating the people. We have to start from the very foundation, that the nation doesn't understand what does it exist for what goal. And here is the problem. So you have to start with the very foundation of things. Olin, and what does it exist for? Dr. Leitman, the nation of Israel exists in order to reach unity. Olin, and nations in general, Dr. Leitman, in order to hear from the people of Israel about connection, unity, and to follow their footsteps in that direction. Olin, so you're separating between what happens in Israel and in other countries, Dr. Leitman. Of course. Olin, even though that people are outraged in Israel and in any other country in the world, Dr. Leitman, because in the current state, we're like any other country. But in regard to the correction, we have to start doing it, and other countries will follow us. In Israel, things are very tense. The public is about to explode against the leadership. Does this tension also have the potential to do something positive? Dr. Leitman, yes, of course. I'm actually very optimistic, and I'm very happy that we're living in such tense times. And it seems to me that out of all of this tension, we will reach a state where the nation will start feeling from themselves how are they supposed to behave, act, do. And what should the nation, the people, the public do? We started talking about the relationship between a citizen and his country. Let's put the country aside and go back to the citizen. An Israeli citizen, Dr. Leitman, has to understand that unless he gets the correct education, he, his family, his town, his area, the entire nation, the entire country, it will not be able to make any change for the better. And is there something that every citizen has to learn about, Dr. Leitman? Yes. And what, Dr. Leitman? How can we connect? That's what's important to us. And how can we, citizens, connect with each other? Dr. Leitman, yes. And why is that the most important thing, Dr. Leitman? Because we simply can't have, needn't have any other concern besides that, because by our connection, we get rid of all problems. If there are problems on the economical level today, a common concern for everyone is what's going to happen with the economy. How will that help people to connect with each other if they feel that the leadership is making mistakes that are destroying their economic situation as individuals? Dr. Leitman, because if we start uniting, leadership will be forced to also be with us. It will not be able to play around however way it feels. Today, it's manipulating the nation through the media, through different things in a way that it does whatever is good for it. So what do citizens have to do in this kind of reality, Dr. Leitman, to want to get to know their method of connection? You're returning to focus to the relations between people again. So you hang no hopes on any change coming from the leadership, but you're saying that it has to come from the public, Dr. Leitman. Of course. So this is your approach, Dr. Leitman. Of course. But how will the relations between people change what's going on in the country? It's not myself and my neighbor, it's what's going on in the country. Dr. Leitman, if the nation will understand what their good fortune depends on, it will affect them in general and will affect the country and even the government, that it will not be able to behave the way that it does. And what should be the gist of the change here? Dr. Leitman, the force of connection above everything, that only by achieving, acquiring the force of connection above us can we come out of any kind of trouble. And what's the connection between people and coming out of our troubles? Were you to say, look, the country decided that you deserve so and so much money for the period of economic collapse that we've experienced now? Great. I understand that that helped me and lifts me economically, but that's not what you're saying. You're saying, look the other way. Don't wait for any kind of benefits from the country, but look at the relations between people. It's like two different worlds. Dr. Lipman, I understand.
Only
connection between people builds a good, nice, corrected, united society. And then citizens that are connected that way, they can understand what do they exist for, what level of connection, mutual connection of love do they have to reach, and therefore the entire functioning of the country and its systems have to be directed toward such a state. Toward the state of love another as yourself. Oh, and the country has to set this as its goal, Dr. Lipman? Yes. Oh, and to bring every citizen to a state of love another as yourself, Dr. Lipman? Yes, but it will never be able to do it and will never want to do it because at the head are standing the most egoistic people. And therefore, only the public, the nation, can force itself and its government to replace the regime from egoistic people to people that at least see the goal, at least the goal, as uniting the nation. I'm not talking about love, but at least unity and connection between people to head toward that. And the way things are now, they won't go for it because they're afraid. Their entire goal now is to separate the people by which they weaken the forces of society and then everyone goes their way. Owen, I'm not a politician. I don't want to promote the right, the left. It all seems childish to me and purposeless. I see that people are changing, but the record repeats itself, the same problems. Looking back at the citizens, what can each citizen change about himself, about his attitude toward life, in order to provide a better future for himself? Dr. Lipman, only unity and connection among the people. The unity of the nation should be the main thing. Because by that, we get encouragement from above, from the general force of nature, which is one for all. Oh, and nature will start to project positive things onto us instead of negative things. Dr. Lipman, true. Oh, the corona is a blow that came from nature. Dr. Lipman, excellent example. Oh, okay, so if we start opening our heart to the force of good connection between people, like previously you said, that we'll feel that the country is like a family, then from nature we'll get a different kind of feedback, positive instead of negative. Dr. Lipman, undoubtedly. Let's see. Oh, and how does that mechanism work? Dr. Lipman, because nature is global, integral, all the forces are interconnected, and if we work together with these forces in that direction, then for sure we are entering under their mutual positive influence. Oh, and so your perspective is much broader than governments, budgets. Dr. Lipman, of course, I don't need all of these things. Owen, what then? Dr. Lipman, only the connection of the people above all of these problems, the connection of the nation, and from the connection of the nation, out of that, we will start changing all of these systems like you're talking about, like taxes and mutual help and commitment and so on. Owen, this connection, which is a foundation in the relationship between the citizens and its country, you said that a corrected state should act like a family, that a person appreciates his leaders due to their wisdom and they give him what he needs and make sure that everyone has what they need. What is the first step toward that? Dr. Lipman, first step is that we can act a national education. When we say education, we think about kindergarten, schools, Dr. Lakeman. No. For all people, all citizens, from 0 to 100. National education, that the people of Israel are one people, one heart, all of Israel are friends. This is what we have to come to first and foremost. We came to this country. We're already 80 years into things. We have to build a nation according to what the nation of Israel is supposed to be. And afterwards, we'll also build a country. What we have now is only a rickety beginning. Olin, an Israeli corrected citizen, what is that? Dr. Lakeman, that I accept all other citizens as my brothers, together with which I want to build such a system in which we will feel ourselves as a family. Olin, what does it mean to be a corrected state of Israel? Dr. Lakeman, a state is a system that its only concern is for all of us to be as a family. The people of Israel have no right to exist unless they are connected that way. Oh, and if the people of Israel come closer to this kind of connection, like in a family, what will it do with their foreign affairs, the rest of the countries? Dr. Lakeman, they'll accept it gladly. They'll want it. They'll want to connect to us. They'll want to. Owen, and can you explain, Dr. Lakeman, that everyone will think that now there is some great big innovation in the people of Israel, that we should come closer to them and learn from them. Owen, the turmoil that nations are in against their governments, does it have to do with how things are here in Israel? Can we help to calm the turmoil in other countries down? Dr. Lakeman, of course, if we arrange things correctly, like we said, according to what we've explained now, we can calm things down all over the world. Everyone will look at us and we'll take an example from it. Owen, Dr. Lakeman, a family, a country as a family, what is it? Dr. Lakeman, where everyone cares for everyone and then we have no other concerns. Owen, amen. Thank you very much, Dr. Lakeman. Till next time, all the best.
The strongest factor of influence on a person. Question. The environment affects us through three channels. The first is the media. The second are the examples of people around us. And the third is through thoughts and desires, since we are in the same system on the same globe and all are interconnected. Which of these factors is most influential? Answer. The strongest factor of influence on a person is the surrounding society, its examples and opinions. Question. We humans can only change our attitude to the world, but is that enough? Or do we still need to change the world? Answer. We ourselves cannot change the world. We can gradually change our attitude toward it, and then we will see another world. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, May 7, 2020.